Another year has gone in a flash, but before we finally close the door on 2023, it's time for one last look back on a fabulous year. Greetings and welcome to the final episode for 2023 of The Thirsty Mage, the podcast where friends sit down for a pint and chat about some of our favorite RPG topics. The pints we're drinking this episode, however, are nothing but pure black liquid energy of the strongest coffee that you can find, because in order for three of us to be on one recording at the same time, we had to resort to some early morning fun, I guess. So we've got Jordan, who this time had multiple alarm clocks ready, so he's here at the beginning.
Yeah, I just forgot to turn on my microphone or my headset. So no, people were talking, you guys were talking, but I couldn't hear anything. I'm like, oh, everyone's just being quiet or working on the notes or something like that. But yeah, my wife had an alarm clock. I had an alarm clock that did the job. And I got up and made a tea. I had a little bit of food. So I'm up. I'm awake. I'm cognizant of what's happening aside from the headset issue. But yeah, I'm ready to go here.
You were triggering your inner Home Alone in the last episode where the alarm clock doesn't wake them up in the morning. And
well, I'm already on my 10th rewatch of the movie so far for December. So like, are we all? But yeah.
Yeah. And with the new kid along the way, my guess is that even though Casey's here and probably got a little bit of sleep, he probably can't remember any of it.
We're up for some kegs and eggs. Remember that one back in the day, guys? Yeah, no kegs. I did have some eggs, and actually, I got a decent amount of sleep last night. It wasn't too bad. So, and I got some Dark Souls time in this morning, so to offset any good night's sleep I got.
That's a good start. That's a good start to your Saturday, I think.
Yeah, yep. And then, like I was saying before we start recording, got the family cook off to make a bunch of cookies this afternoon, so we'll be nice and full as well.
Yeah, we got a long day ahead of us after a fun talk here about some of the fun stuff that we saw this year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough. Like, there's games that I was looking up and I completely forgot they were even in 2023. It feels that long ago. Like Octopath Traveler wasn't even that far away. It was in March, but it feels like, you know, years ago. But
I was going to say, it feels like when I was looking at it, because that is a game I put on the old Christmas list to potentially get. And I was like, it feels like it wasn't even this year. Like, it definitely felt like years ago that game came out.
Especially when you're like, the gauge of a year is like what releases. And when you have so many games coming out, it feels like there was like 4 years of video game releases this year.
All jammed into one.
Yeah. But before we get into the meat and potatoes, I just want to make one last plug of a couple things for the final episode of the year. So if you haven't already purchased the great new book written by author extraordinaire Jordan Rudick, you know, maybe because you were waiting for the physical copy to come out, which is now available, by the way, you can Google A Game in the Life plus Rudick, R-U-D-E-K. Or you can head over to thethirstymage.com. There's a big old link in the middle of the screen there. It sends you to Jordan's page where all of the versions, digital, physical, every storefront it's available. You can take your pick. You can go through who, you know, which retailer that you're not mad at this month. Pick the one that's good for you, maybe the e-reader that you got or wherever. And you can pick that up. It's a great way to start off the new year with a fun read of Jordan's new book. So I recommend everybody head over there to pick it up. And speaking of thethirstymage.com, our wonderful website, which is now finally, it's taken me much too long to finally catalog from episode 200 up until today's, which I think is 242. We got all of them listed up there, so if you're wanting to see what you've missed, we've got a breakdown of all the episodes there. I promise I will start working backwards from 200 to get them all on there, but that's a New Year's resolution, let's say. And but the website is only possible thanks to our wonderful patrons over at Patreon. So not only do they help keep the lights on here, keep the website going, keep the podcast hosted, but you also get the episodes a week early, so you get to hear them in advance. Sometimes even get to discover a fun screw up that I caught, or you know, that I didn't catch in the editing process, that you get to tell me about you know, before it actually goes live to the public. So
you guys get to be the beta listeners.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah. I rely on Rich for all of my screw up.
All catching. Your blunders.
That's yeah. Right. We appreciate
Rich,
that.
Rich hasn't missed one yet. So thank you, Rich. And lastly, if you aren't already a subscriber to the Talk Nintendo podcast, the Christmas holidays is a perfect time to catch up on some podcasts. You know, listen to a new one if you haven't already listened to it. You'll have all that free time. So, yep, head on over to whatever podcast player that you use. Search up Talk Nintendo and listen to Casey's other podcast. Casey's there with a couple of Jimmies, and they do a good podcast about Nintendo. So, like I said, I think most of our listeners are probably listening to both, but there's a few scragglers out there who haven't heard of it yet. So.
Well, yeah, anyone new to the Mage might not know about Casey's other podcast, so you got to check that out for sure.
Yeah, primarily Nintendo, but we definitely do talk about, you know, PlayStation and some VR stuff as well, and the occasional Xbox from Alex.
Yeah, well, and Alex has got the Steam Deck.
Yeah, so he's got his Steam Deck, yeah.
You catch some Steam Deck discussion too, so that's good. But yeah, I guess we'll get into our final look back at 2023. So last episode, we did our top 10 games of the year. So if you didn't catch that, you can listen to that. We talk about a few of the games that we enjoyed. But this time, we're kind of doing an overall view of all the games. And, you know, we got a few different categories that we're going to talk about, but we're going to start with the biggest. We'll start negative because, you know, you can't be better if you haven't looked back at your failures. And there's a few things that didn't go the way that, you know, video game players had hoped for a few of the games that came out. And so we're going to start with our biggest disappointments for 2023. So, Jordan, why don't you tell us? Let's really rile up the crowd with Jordan's biggest disappointment for 2023.
Yeah. It's all on me to mess things up here. I'm going to wake up first, make sure my headset and everything's connected before I make this proclamation. You know what? Inevitably, in a year filled with really good games, really good experiences, there's going to be something that just doesn't live up to the greatness around it or all the hype or all the critical reception that's just glowing and all that stuff. I wouldn't even put my biggest disappointment on the game. It's just as much on me, I suppose. But mine for 2023 is that Tears of the Kingdom didn't draw me in more, didn't kind of capture my attention more. I obviously, you know, super looking forward to it, just like everybody else was after the masterpiece that is Breath of the Wild. But yeah, well, I guess maybe it was the time period in which I was playing Tears of the Kingdom that I had other things going on, or that I was more interested in other games. Sometimes you're just into a different genre when a game, a highly anticipated game, comes along, and you can't get into that different genre, right? Because you're kind of stuck in another one. At least that happens to me sometimes. But yeah, I found myself kind of playing Tears of the Kingdom in dribs and drabs, and yes, enjoying what I was doing. You know, it's not like I wasn't having fun, you know, finding the shrines again and going through parts of the story, and the boss fights are particularly, you know, entertaining as they have been before. But yeah, it's just come back to this world and seeing a lot of the similar mechanics and maybe not completely jiving with the building, which requires, I think, a creativity that I just don't really exercise very much in games, and not, it's not a mechanic necessarily that I look for in open world or other types of games, ones where building is a primary mechanic. Like I like when you talk to people and they come to your village and they build a town, you know, but when you actually are in charge of kind of building the structures and building the things that you play with, it's just not something that maybe comes as naturally to me. So it could be the Master Hand, or Casey, help me out here. What's the building mechanic name in Tears?
Hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about, but yeah, yep. I don't.
Like, I'm just gonna call it Master Hand for now, and maybe that's right, maybe it's not.
I do, but like the Master Hand sounds.
Yeah,
good to
people
me.
Will know what I'm talking about at any rate. So yeah, just the building the structures that you use, that you fly on. Like there are parts of it that I did like, and parts that are just like kind of go over my head, right? All right, my brain wouldn't think to do to solve a situation. I wouldn't go there first. But I know that people that have maybe better imaginations than I do, it's like, you know, they're kids in a candy store at that point. So I always appreciate, you know, what is happening with the Zelda games. I think that they are incredibly well made, and I know they're kind of still pushing that boundary of what happens in a Zelda game. But I'll always be a simpleton, you know, wishing for another 2D top-down Zelda, whether that's set a remake or set in a same universe or same world as previous ones. Like that's just, I'm just a kid like that. Like, again, if you've read A Game in Life, you know that Link to the Past is mentioned in that book as being a timeless and just an incredibly important game for me. I'm always going to be a sucker for 2D type Zelda games. So yeah, Tears of the Kingdom, it drew me in, but just maybe not as much as I was hoping for or expected to. And maybe, you know, maybe in January during a podcast episode, I'll be talking about how, like, over the holiday break, I started playing Tears of the Kingdom and got really into it again. And wow, what an ending. Like, isn't that crazy? Like, I could very easily flip flop on this, but I think just right now, as of, you know, the end of December or mid December, it was a little bit disappointing that Tears didn't just kind of completely envelop or absorb my attention like Breath of the Wild did.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that because I think that's sort of my biggest disappointment too. And like I said, I think it's more on me than it is the game, because I found that anytime I go play it, I have an amazing time. I'm like, wow, this is great. I love exploring. I love going to the shrines, right? And then, you know, ultimately, you know, I'm 3 of the 4 major dungeon areas done. So I still have, actually, I've been playing, or I fired it up the other day and played a little bit and got to Gerudo Village. So it's like I'm right on the beginning, too early to speak, the beginning of that sort of fourth area. But it's one of those things, like, it's like I play it and I'm like, man, this is so good. And then, you know, I'll stop, obviously, for whatever reason. And then, like, I just, like, don't have that motivation or excitement to go play it again. Even though every time I do jump in there, I'm having a really great time. So, and then it's funny, right? Nintendo just released the in-review sort of thing they do every year. And to my surprise, I've put in 67 hours of Tears of the Kingdom. So, like, in my mind, I'm like, man, I feel like I barely played the game, like, but clearly, I mean, 67 hours is nothing to scoff at, you know, so, I mean, I've definitely played it more than I thought, but it's just, like I said, I don't know what it is. Is it because it is sort of similar to Breath of the Wild, even though it is definitely different? Like, it's not a carbon copy by any means, right? Like, the underground area is new and massive, up in the sky, and the abilities, definitely. I really like my favorite ability is to, like, when you're underneath that, you can just jump through the ground and go upward, right? And you could, like, climb through big spots of land. But it doesn't, you know, it's not only earth. Like, you can use it to jump through buildings up to the top. And essentially, they use that a lot with, you know, a bunch of the different shrines, right? And the beauty of Zelda, or the more recent Zeldas, is, like, yeah, they give you a puzzle and they might have sort of like an intended, you know, solution to said puzzle. But the game, with the physics and the different tools you have, it opens up so many different doors. And like you said, with the creation of all these different things, like, it really, you know, it's an open sandbox to really let you go wild. But yeah, I guess it's my smooth brain. I end up just like, you know, I could never create anything as cool as some of these people are doing. You know, I struggle enough to, like, get the 4 wheels on a board to make a little car. But yeah, like I said, I think it's more on me than it is the game, because the game itself is amazing. Like, it really is a great game. But for whatever reason, it's just, I find it difficult to find the motivation to get back in there. And you know, and we can have a whole conversation on what we hope the future of Zelda is. And, you know, it might be hard for them to go back to the more contained linear stories where, you know, you have your X amount of dungeons, you get your weapons that sort of really, you know, are used in one dungeon. And you know, obviously the bow and arrow and stuff like that are used on many. But, you know, where you get that sort of like dungeon unique item for said puzzles. I don't know if they'll go back to that, especially the way these new games have sold like hotcakes.
Yeah, I mean, they've not been so successful. It would be
not
really
according
tough.
To Enuma either. They just had the interview where he couldn't understand why people even want to go back.
Yeah. Why do people want 2D Zelda games? What's wrong with you? Like, oh my God, like, well, please don't say that.
I didn't read it 100%. I saw those comments. I'm assuming he is referring more to like the, like, why would you want to go back to an Ocarina of Time where it's like, all right, yeah. You go 1, 2, 3, that, you know, get your Master Sword, and then you go through the, you know, I know there's like one or two dungeons you can sort of switch up the order. That's what I think he's referring to. I don't think that necessarily he, like, because 2D Zeldas are very different, you know, even from like the other 3D. So I imagine like down the road, we're going to get a 2D Zelda at some point. It's been 10 years now since a Link Between Worlds. And I know we had Triforce Heroes thrown in there, but
I think someone else will make it. I don't know that it'll be him. He might be like maybe doing some oversight or something, but I think it'll be a different team. Like, I hope they have a different
DeGrezzo,
team.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've earned a chance to do their own for sure. Like, you can
even
you
if they have
remakes, but
yeah, like even if they had the oversight of, you know, some of the bigger dogs to, like, you know, yeah, with dungeon design or something, but they really implemented it kind of thing. But I don't know. I just hope at least if they're going to give us these big open worlds, like get like Tears of the Kingdom dungeons are definitely a step in the right direction from Breath of the Wild, but I need to see it go further. I need to see like what Twilight Princess, when you go to like the cat, like the mansion up on the in the snow, right, where it's like the or the Yeti's house, like, right, that's Twilight Princess, or is that,
yep. Yeah, I think, right. So yeah, there's,
yeah, it's not Skyward, that's Twilight.
There's a castle in the snow in Twilight,
yeah. So like I want to see some like ideas like that where like you go into this big dungeon that's, you know, you see it, and even if it did like an MMO thing, like, I mean, I guess they do that even with the shrines where you sort of like zone into just the shrine, like, you know, where it's like, oh, I could see the big castle or big dungeon from the outside, and then you zone in and do that. But I don't know. I'm a sucker for the old games. And like I said, I like the new ones. But man, like if it was up to me, give me another Twilight Princess-esque game.
Casey, your comment about having played 67 hours and then including it as your biggest disappointment, it reminds me of those Steam reviews where it's like they have 200 hours on a game. It's like, oh, terrible. Just worst game ever. Like, never play it. How could I have ever played this game? Like,
or like every MMO player ever. They've got thousands of hours logged in it, yeah. But it's like, this is my most hated game.
Yeah,
of all
I hate
time.
This horrible game. Horrible developers. Like, what were they thinking? Like, I love stuff like that. And it's just funny to hear.
I feel like Steam should have it set up where if you've played more than 50 hours, it automatically puts the thumbs up. Like, yeah. You don't even get a choice.
You're not allowed. You can do like neutral or positive. You can't do negative. You're not allowed.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like I said, it is really like an anomaly of a game for me because, I mean, obviously I played a ton of it and I enjoy it when I do play it. But for some reason, it just, I really can't explain it, to be honest.
Well, it's funny, like when it was first announced for me, I was like, because Breath of the Wild was like an incredible experience, but for me it was all about like the discovery and then the like the puzzles, like doing, working with the mechanics and all that. Like it was so new and you were all the exploration and everything. And like now I can't go back to Breath of the Wild because none of it's like maybe one day when I've like forgotten everything about the game, I'll go back and enjoy it again because discovery, the exploration highs will come back because I'll have forgotten it. But when I was looking at Tears of the Kingdom, it's like, you know, it's too fresh in my mind. Like if we're just going back to Hyrule, like they need to do something else. And then I was like, oh, I'm not gonna buy it unless I see something that really makes it seem like something has changed. And then I think like from the time it was announced till even today, 99% of the videos I see on the internet, on social media, everything, they're always like the contraptions that people have built. And it's like, you know, if that's the highlight, if that's the sell, where it's like, it's Breath of the Wild, but with these crazy gadgets. And it's like, no, like, because I'm with Jordan. I'm like, this is just not the game. Like, maybe there's games that I would enjoy that in, but not Zelda. Like, that. Like, mm-hmm. Why is Zelda about attaching all these weird things and making, like, rocket ships? And,
well,
I've seen, like, funny things, like the air, like that air helicopter thing from Avengers, the flying aircraft carrier, whatever, like, I don't want to be spending hours building these weird things. Like,
well, I will say you don't need to build all those weird things to have a good time. You know, like, I think those are the show pieces because it really does let people's creativity fly. And then it also is like hey, you can do just about anything in this game if you wanted to. But that being said, like, where you're like, hey, like, maybe revisit Breath of the Wild one day when you forget about it. At that point, I would say get Tears of the Kingdom. At that point, because it does do enough different, like, it, to me, like, the abilities are different. There are a lot of different things, and like, there are definitely similarities, but, you know, I would say, like, if you were going to get to the point where you're like, hey, I want to revisit Breath of the Wild, I'd be like, find a cheap Tears of the Kingdom, because it's different enough. And like, if you are going in there fresh, like, you're going to have a good time. And, you know, it isn't just 100% relying on the build mechanics. Like, there are times where you have to, but like, very rudimentary, like, oh, glider, put like a little fan on it and put the little control center on it, and like, you could fly around pretty good, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to make these big robust things to have a good time.
I'm kind of with you on the, like, for the next game, obviously they're going to want to continue to evolve, and like, I have no problem with the attitude of, like, you know, we're not going backwards, we're going forwards, because that's basically Final Fantasy. It's like, we're, you know, I know you enjoyed this last game, but that we're not going to make another one again. Like, okay, mm-hmm. that's fine. Like, that's cool. But, you know, if exploration is what Zelda is now, then I agree with you that we should be exploring dungeons then. Like, you know, maybe you don't have to have, like, you need to find this item to do this dungeon. Maybe, like, they have, you know, these four or five or six big set piece dungeons where it's like, that is like the game. It's like, you know, you're not exploring Hyrule. You're exploring these ultra detailed, massive dungeons where you're just kind of walking around. Like, I think I'd rather see them go in that route where it's like, have these incredibly large places where you could spend like tens of hours in just seeing all the things. They could dive into the lore of, you know, by putting all these story pieces within the dungeons. Like, how many video essays could they generate on YouTube by having all this, like, stuff inside these castles or whatever, right? Like, to me, it just seems like that would be the better route to go, is it's like, okay, you've explored Hyrule twice now. Let's give you something else to explore. Mm. Or it almost makes you wonder if they'll have, like, a Wind Waker style of Breath of the Wild, where it's like, okay, now it's you know, they can't have as much water as they had in Waker, obviously, but
seven, yeah, out of 10, too much water.
Yeah, if they have, like, some kind of, like, oh, this, you know, this is 1,000 years after an apocalypse that destroyed Hyrule, and now here's this new water, you know, maybe not water world, but something to that
extent. It can't even be water, because they've done that twice, right, with Phantom Hourglass and Wind Waker, so it would have to be something else, maybe, like, I don't even know, but maybe in the sky or something. You know,
it ripped off Xenoblade too. It's just a sea sky.
Yeah. Speaking of skies.
I guess I'll wrap up the biggest disappointment for the year. And for me, it was, I'll say that I have a mini disappointment in the fact that Dragon Quest III, the 2D HD, hasn't come out yet. It's hard to be too disappointed because there's so many great games where it's like, why didn't this other great game come out? So it doesn't bother me too much, especially since I just recently read that I think Yuji Horii was playtesting the game just recently. So it sounds like it's probably not that far off.
I think it's looking like next year, right, for that one. Because 12 is definitely not next year. So
I think we'll see that soon. So. Biggest disappointment is Starfield. Like, I was so excited for Starfield to come out.
That was your problem.
I know. that's the thing is, you know, you get your hopes up because I'm a big Bethesda fan, like, you know, still playing Skyrim. I still play Fallout 4 now and then. I've always loved their games. Like, you know, the big, again, it's funny that we're talking about two massive exploration styled games as their biggest disappointments, because, you know, I've always enjoyed the worlds that Bethesda have built, but they just crapped the bed with Starfield. It's funny, I was actually reading this morning an article that came out yesterday from PC Gamer. Christopher Livingston had done this article that their biggest issues can't be solved with patches, mods, or expansions. And he had a list of the biggest issues, and it was like word for word mine. So I'll just go over them quickly. Like, so the Starfield cities aren't places I want to spend time. That's definitely something that was for me. Like, the first city I went to, just... like, I just walking past everything. There was nothing to look at. It was boring. Randomly placed points of interest on huge procedurally generated planets. Can't compare to handcrafted maps and points of interest. I didn't even play long enough to go to the empty planets. So I'm thank God for that, because I would have been livid if I was like having to put up with loading screen after loading screen just to get to a planet that there's nothing on.
Yeah.
Base building is a step back from Fallout 4, which is crazy to me, because like even Fallout 4's base building
was a step back, right, from 3, from what I remember.
Well, there wasn't 1 and 3. I think 4 was where it was kind of introduced, but it was still kind of basic to a certain degree. Like, there was like, you could do some detailed bases and stuff, and it was fun, like fending off the hordes, but it was still like not as detailed as some of the that it could be. I thought they were going to take a step forward, but not back. And then, yeah, space travel is like, there is no travel. It's just loading screens. So I know the thing that I've been hearing from Bethesda is they're trying to work in a way to put in the space exploration. Like, I think they're going to try to put in, like, I don't know if they're going to go fully No Man's Sky where you can take off and land on planets, because that seems like it would be a huge undertaking if they haven't already done that. But I don't even think that, like, that wouldn't fix the game in any way. It would just improve it. So it's like, it seems like a massive undertaking for like little gain. So it's, I don't personally know if Starfield can be fixed, like, because to me it would need like a complete overhaul, because it doesn't feel like a Bethesda game to me. It just.
You know what it seems like? I'm not the biggest Bethesda fan. I haven't played Starfield, and I've played very limited Skyrim. But, right, like you were saying, the world is usually the best part of those games, right? Exploring, and then, like, you know, obviously the stories and the, like, sort of quests alongside that. But essentially Starfield, right, like, just sort of taken, like, instead of having one big, cool world, it's like, hey, there's a million little ones to go explore. And, like... I feel like they're like took away their biggest strength, like building one big cool world to explore, and then instead, like, let's just have a bunch of little ones. And, you know, I feel like you can only really flesh out those things so deep when, like you said, who knows how many people are even going to go to this one in particular, versus a world where it's like, oh, we could sort of funnel them from point A to B on the story, and like along that path there is things littered to do and stray off the main path.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you know, when you're going from like Whitehelm to Dawnstar or something, like, you could come across like caves that are filled with like a quest or enemies that you discover some kind of new weapon or like some kind of, I can't even remember what they're called, like the demon weapons or whatever, or quests, or, you know, you could just fumble up to an NPC, which has some funny dialogue, or, you know, in Fallout 4, it's like there's buildings that you could just walk past. You're like, I wonder what's in there, and there'd be something cool in there to discover. Or there, you know, you come into like factions fighting each other, or there's just like, there's always something that to do, and you always run into something. Whereas in Starfield, there was just nothing. Like, I just like, I walked like my first few hours, like, I walked through the city, got the main quest, and left, and there was nobody, like, there was nothing to do. Nothing happened. I walked from one area to the other. And then, like, there's no city maps, so, like, you can't even kind of chart your way through to if you're, like, looking for stuff. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just, they just really dropped the ball. And the fact that they, like, they didn't get any nominations in the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. Like very few. I think they
had that beautiful paid advertisement with their 10 out of 10 splash screen.
Yeah. who reviewed directly from Xbox? Like Xbox probably official
Phil Spencer himself. Yeah. Phil Spencer called it 10 out of 10.
Him and his relatives, you know, like each just write a review real quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. So I just a quick anecdote or aside, I'm buying an Xbox Series S from a friend like at a very cheap price. So I am going to be playing Starfield at some point just to try it over the break. So I'll have some impressions for sure. But what I think the problem is they went for breadth as opposed to depth. Right. And I think what we like about Bethesda games is they feel like a very lived in kind of they are big worlds, but they're also just very full of stuff, right? They're very densely populated with story and meaningful content. Yes, you know, when we first played Skyrim, it seemed massive. By comparison, now it doesn't seem as big, right? But the things you do in Skyrim, you happen to find like very interesting story beats and very interesting tasks to complete, right? Same in Fallout games as well. Like it's the story, it's the characters, it's not that there's 1,000 planets. You know, if you want 1,000 planets, you play No Man's Sky, right? So them trying to do like just a bigger version of a Bethesda game probably backfired, because that's not really what people go to Bethesda games for, right? They want a really crafted, tailored experience, and this doesn't seem to be that. It just seems to be one of those like, oh, desert island games, you can play it forever, even if it's not super interesting. And yeah, I think that might be where they primarily misfired here.
Well, that's why Baldur's Gate 3 was so wonderful. It's because like there was just so much to do.
Yeah,
like
and it's not a huge game, like in terms of the space of it. But it's just, again, densely packed with interesting story elements, right? That's the best comparison this year probably is Starfield versus Baldur's Gate 3, right? Like how to make a modern RPG, basically.
Yeah. Based on
Arian just disrespected him hard. And then I saw a cut of Tim Howard, right? Is his
Tom? So, why am I blanking on it now?
I thought
Todd Howard. Very close. Yeah.
As you can see, I'm a big Bethesda fan. Yeah. And just like a cut of like all the awards with like Baldur's Gate and Stargate in it, Starfield, and them all going to Baldur's Gate and his face all grumpy.
Oh, that's a good
poor fella. Yeah. I mean, he had to have known there's no shot he was going to win any of those. Like, I mean, it was pretty obvious that Baldur's Gate was pretty much going to win every category.
It's honestly an unfortunate year for them to release in the same time span as what's going to end up being one of the best RPGs of all time in Baldur's Gate 3, right? And a true like reinvigoration. Not say that like games like Divinity Original Sin 2 didn't also do that, but it's really reinvigorating like D&D based RPGs, I'd say.
Yeah, it's the culmination of all their work, right?
And 100%, like,
paired with a big IP, even though I know obviously it'd been sort of not as big recently, but like a name that held cachet with players, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we got the unpleasantness out of the way, so now it's time to talk about our biggest surprise of the year, our biggest the thing that we enjoyed the most that we didn't realize we were going to enjoy. There was so many 2023. They're
pleasant surprises, right? Yeah. Where these aren't like, oh, it was, you know, I'm so surprised by how bad this was. No, these are nice things. So
no, we were taking a right turn on the positivity. So
for sure.
Yeah. So Casey, why don't you start with yours?
Yeah. So I've got two. I've got here. The first one I'm going to go with Vampire Survivors. Did either of you guys play that game?
Oh yeah, so good. I played it. I played it on Switch right when that version dropped. Yeah.
Yep. That's how I played it too. And I played that thing. Now it's $5. This is easily like the one of the easiest recommendations I can give, especially $5. Like this game is incredible.
Biggest bang for your buck, maybe. Like
I played it so much for like 2 weeks. Like no joke, I just like nonstop. It's a roguelike, and it's simple, right? Like your guy auto attacks, and you try and survive as long as you can. Or no, wait, it's for like 30 minutes, right? I should say.
There's a 30-minute timer. You're still trying to survive out the whole timer, which can be tough.
But it's really cool because I feel like the weapons, I mean, you sort of fall into, you find ones you really like, but like there's a bunch of different weapons and you keep upgrading them and then they get like really, really like devastating to the enemy. And then what's cool is if there's different combinations of items. So if you've got, you know, if you power up these two specific items, it can like, you know, upgrade to like a big beefy boy and adds like new, you know, sort of abilities to it and makes it like really devastating. So like the idea is you sort of want to pair up a few different ones so you get a bunch of super weapons and just wreak havoc. But yeah, this is a game. It had come out on Steam. I don't know if it was earlier in the year or maybe last year. So I'd heard people talk about it and say it was really good. But, you know, I don't play that much on, you know, Steam. So I was like, whatever. And then, yeah, it came out on Switch and I played it. And I was just unbelievably surprised at how good and addicting and satisfying it is to get on these runs. It honestly, it makes a half hour just zip by in seemingly no time.
It really lived up to the hype. Like, if everyone was talking about this game when it first came out, like, oh, game of the year, like, you got to play this. Like, it was all over the timelines. And then I was like, oh, you know, it'll probably be good. And then when it came to Switch, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I think I picked it up just before a flight when I went to New York for this Konami event this year. And I'm like, I'm playing it in the hotel. I'm playing it like in the Uber, like to the events or back to the airport, all that stuff. Like, I couldn't put it down. Like, I played that the whole time. It was so fun.
Yeah. And it's got some DLC out there for $1.99 each.
Yeah, I want to try that DLC. Yeah, I haven't a chance yet.
So it's just a real affordable game. I want to say this was made by one dude or like a really small team.
Yeah, that's possible.
I don't want to say that with 100% certainty, but I remember it being like either a small team or like one person or something. So yeah, really super awesome. And I couldn't recommend it enough.
It looks like it is a single individual who did it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure other people maybe helped down the line or with the porting and stuff like that. But yeah, it looks like it might have been a single dev.
He made a hell of a game.
Oh yeah.
And the second one was actually Fire Emblem Engage. This was I've always been a Fire Emblem fan. You know, I was on board with the first American release back in the GBA, and forever I've played all of them pretty much, aside from I believe the Wii game was the only like main Fire Emblem game I hadn't played. You know, Awakening's awesome. I played the Birthright and all that crap, which was good, you know, but like I remember I played like the three paths real quick.
It's easy to burn out after doing all three. Yeah.
Yeah, I started to burn out a little bit on it. And then I played Three Houses and I stopped pretty soon in and I was like, I guess I'm just not a Fire Emblem fan anymore, you know, or that much. But I think it's because I had the vouchers, the voucher program. So I had an extra voucher. And I was like, you know what? Like at the time when Engage came out, I guess it was one of those. There wasn't anything really shaking and baking for me game wise. And I remember Perry and Alex were having fun with it. So I threw down and holy moly, I will say Fire Emblem is so much better when it's not trying to be Persona. I feel like it got back to the meat and potatoes of what makes Fire Emblem great. And yeah, this was actually, I think, my second most played Switch game at 34 hours. So yeah, one of those, I went from I'm not getting this game at all to playing it. And I would even say it's, you know, I don't have my top five listed out, but I'd say this would be in the top five for sure. Just, yeah, just one of those, I felt like I was past the Fire Emblem, I guess, my phase in my life, if you will. And then I ended up playing this and loving it and really hope they stick more to this style and not, you know, the personified style that Three Houses was going for.
Yeah, I think that the problem is I don't know that this performed as well as Three Houses, so they might go back to that format again. I don't know. It sounds like we might be in line for some remakes coming down the pipe as opposed to new games. So it might be that they want to start, you know, going back to the back catalog of Fire Emblem games that never got localized and maybe just redoing those. But
even if they redid like the GBA ones, you know, because I feel like the beautiful thing about remaking a Fire Emblem game is like, I'm assuming once you've got the engine set, it's probably pretty easy because it's like it's tile based, right? Like, so you could program them to literally do the same movements that are in the original game, you know, fairly easy, I'm assuming, once you've sort of got the tools in place, you know? So, like, if they sort of made an engine and be like, hey, we're going to remake, you know, 7 and 8, which were the first two released in America, and like you said, and then maybe even do like a couple of like I know 6, which wasn't released in America,
mm-hmm.
and 7, which was the first one. Like, they pretty much, like, if you look at them, they like use the same sprites and everything. So it's like, if you remade it like a updated system, you know, I'm sure they can make it, you know, obviously I don't want to say easily, but like much easier than maybe some other style of game.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're, I don't know if Fire Emblem is going to grow necessarily as a franchise. I think it kind of, after Awakening, like, a lot of people started picking up, and Three Houses probably was a big bump to the audience as well. And now you kind of have this established fan base of Fire Emblem fans. So going back and doing remakes now makes sense, because you're like, okay, we have all these people that are now into Fire Emblem that haven't played all these games that never left Japan, or that were on older systems or something like that, but now they're playing them on Switch or Switch 2 or whatever. So I could see, like, you know, okay, let's remake these games. They're going to sell in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 million copies. We're really happy with that. We're still making good money on that. And then maybe in the background, they're working on like the next Awakening or the next game to really push the envelope of what a Fire Emblem game could be. But yeah, I want to get back to Engage. Like, I did like it. It was the first time I'd played on like a significantly harder difficulty than I normally do. And on classic mode as well. So my characters are dying and they're gone. Right. So
When I
play like that, I tend to play very cautiously and patiently. Like, I don't want to lose anybody, of course. Like, that's the Fire Emblem experience for me, you know. So I do want to get back to that at some point. I think I was about, you know, 40% of the way through, maybe half the way through. And I was digging it. The combat is still incredible, even if the side stuff I found more engaging in Three Houses. But yeah.
But it's funny, Perry did it on the super difficult, and on his time review.
Oh, really? Okay.
He had like 90 hours.
Oh my gosh.
To beat it. And everyone was like, how the heck do you spend 90 hours on that? But he did the super punishing real. He played with the big boy pants on, if you will.
Yeah, I like it. I'm glad I'm proud of him for doing that. I need to let him know.
Yeah,
that.
No, that's an accomplishment, because these games definitely get tough. And yeah, and one last thing just to say, going down the paths of remakes, I would welcome it, because one of my favorite, if not my favorite Fire Emblem game, is actually Echoes Shadows of Valentia.
It's so good. Yeah.
You know, so I would, with open arms, welcome some more remakes.
I mean, that was pure story and pure combat. Like, they really did away with a lot of the extra stuff, and it was super good for that reason, I think.
I think it's my favorite Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
Well, I know for my biggest surprise of the year, it kind of overlaps a little bit with Jordan.
It's going to hurt. You're going to hurt me here.
And I have a quote from a movie that I think sums up perfectly what my thoughts about it. And I'll play the clip. I got it on YouTube here. I'm going to play the clip.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself.
That was my thought for going in. I think there's no way you can make a game worse than Octopath Traveler. It's not possible. There's no way you could make a game that could be any worse than that crap that they released the first time around. And so I at the last minute decided to be all in on Octopath Traveler 2, and I could not be happier, because what a game. Like, just, I think we've probably got like 3 or 4 episodes at least on.
Yeah, it feels like it.
So, like, I'm not going to get into like
only
why it's
four
so
more
good.
To get to 8 more episodes on it, right?
Oh, man. Right, just like, it's such a. If Baldur's Gate 3 hadn't released this year, Octopath Traveler 2 would be my hands down game of the year. Not like that's this. It's just that good. Like, I think I had about 80 or 90 hours into Traveler 2, and it didn't feel like it at all. Like, by the time I was done, I was probably at the point where it's like, yeah, this is good. But if there was like another 10 hours or so, then I probably would have been just as happy to keep going. Like, it was terrific. Like, it fixed all the problems I had from the first one. Had eight excellent story arcs. It had great villains at the end. Like, everything, like, it was just maybe the best turn-based battle system out there right now. Just incredible.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I wonder, had their release dates been reversed, right? If Baldur's Gate 3 was earlier in the year and Octopath 2 in the fall, I wonder if, you know, conversations would be different about best RPG and all that stuff with that recency bias a little bit. And I think a bunch of people did kind of forget about Octopath 2, not for lack of quality, but just because of the timing of it and all the heavy hitters that came out around the fall. You also had the fact that, like, Baldur's Gate 3 could kind of act as a foil against things like Starfield, right? Where you're like, oh, these two huge names games with expectations behind them, and one lives up to them and one doesn't. You're like, oh, wow, this is really, really good. Whereas Octopath 2, I think the expectations were lower, right? Like, there was a lot of, like, they need to fix all these things from the first game. A lot of that kind of sentiment, even though, yeah, I'm not going to belabor the point that Octopath 1 had a fairly good Metacritic score. But, you know, it's funny. Like, I Octopath 2, yeah, what a game. Just incredible. Couldn't put it down. I ended up playing it on PS5 as well and just had a blast. I was so close to platinuming it, and I probably will go for the platinum at some point. If I get sick again and I've got a whole week where I can just do nothing but mindlessly grind to get to a level so I could beat the super boss at the end. But yeah, I mean, such a good game. It, absolutely one people cannot miss this year. You got to get back to that.
Yeah, I've actually on my Christmas list. So
I really hope you get it, Case, because I do want to hear your thoughts. I need you on the Octopath Redemption train, too.
I know. I after all that making fun of the first Octopath for so long. But like I said, between you guys and just even anywhere I've read online is really, I've seen very, very few posts saying anything other than it's a fantastic game that's worth your time. So we'll see. We'll see if Santa brings it down the old chimney this year for me.
Mm-hmm. Pulling for you, or pushing Santa in that direction, please. I guess I'll do mine to wrap us up with the biggest pleasant surprise. So I kind of want to, I don't know if it's a cop out, but just the sheer number of good games that came out this year. Like I think at the beginning of the year, but maybe before this year, and we're like looking forward to what's coming in 2023. I hadn't really thought, like, oh, this is going to be just an incredible year. There's going to be so many good titles. And it just felt like every month we had something absolutely worth playing and something worth getting into. And that's why inevitably, like, a bunch of games just fell by the wayside. Like, I'm playing Final Fantasy 16 right now, and I'll share more impressions of that in a few weeks. I think about halfway through, a little bit more than halfway through. And I'm really liking it. Like, I'm liking it more than I thought I would. You know, I was a little bit down on it, you know, thinking it's not really a Final Fantasy game. But I can see that DNA now, and I can see, like, you know, how they're pushing the envelope and how it's an evolution of 15 in particular. Actually, I'm liking it a lot more than I did like 15, even though 15 kind of did have a party. And I can see how 16 has like a party system as well to an extent. But yeah, just the volume of quality titles across all the different platforms, just another really, really fantastic year for us. You know, it's reminding me of years like 2017, you know, 2020. Every 3 years, we're just getting a banger year and month after month of titles that you really want to get into, and you kind of have to make hard choices about what you want to play. Like, making those decisions is hard, but it's also like, you know, we're kind of spoiled, I guess, a little bit by, you know, the titles we get to leave behind and then maybe pick up later on sale or something like that. Like, I literally had Spider-Man 2. Installed on my PlayStation, and I go back and play Diablo 4 and I'm still playing Diablo 4. Like, I mean, that being such a good game for me this year. And so I'm juggling Diablo 4 with Final Fantasy 16. So PlayStation 5 has been great for me this year. Obviously played a lot of games on Switch, Pikmin, the Pixel Pikmin Remasters baby. Came out this year. I mean, really, really just a littered with riches, you know, just, again, a fantastic year of 2023. And I think that the most fun part is that I didn't really expect that. I kind of thought, like, oh, you know, we're seeing probably the end of the Switch, you know, we're looking on the horizon to the next Switch. Xbox just hasn't had a ton to interest me so far. So I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not, you know, in a hurry to pick up an Xbox necessarily. But yeah, just third party games just kind of really knocking it out of the park this year, like a Baldur's Gate 3, you know, which I also need to get back to. And then Nintendo's first party stuff being really, really good this year as well. But I'm looking forward to, in 2024, revisiting a bunch of games in 2020 that came out in 2023 that I didn't get a chance to. I haven't even played the new WarioWare game. I want to do that too. So, yeah, I wrote down in the notes, like, my biggest pleasant surprise was also that I wasn't the only person to like Octopath Traveler 2. And I'm like, yeah, I could see why, you know, other people would get into it. Now, my hope is that, you know, now that people have discovered Octopath 2 being really, really good, more people will go back and maybe appreciate kind of the seeds that are there in the first game. But
don't do that, people.
That's right. No, that's
invest your 60 plus hours somewhere else.
Let's not get crazy.
These are my dreams that will never go fulfilled. But
I don't believe Octopath 2 can be so good to wipe out the stank of Octopath 1. Please, I just don't see it.
Live in hope is my motto, I suppose. Yeah, but I mean, 2023, what a year, what a fantastic year. We're probably going to see a new console next year. I think indicators are pointing in that direction. I think Xbox is still, you know, waiting to deliver on a promise of all these good games to come out. Maybe that's next year, so that's exciting too. But yeah, just I'm really happy to have had just an abundance of options in 2023. Like, there was never really a lot of downtime where I'm like, oh, I don't know what to play next. There was always something great to sink my teeth into.
Yeah. Well, that kind of puts a bow on 2023 for a little bit. Like you said, we'll probably be playing those 2023 games leading into the new year. But for the most part, you know, it's time to look ahead. And as we wrap up our episode, I think we're all going to just share what we're looking forward to most in 2024. It's kind of been surprising how many really good games or potentially really good games have already been announced. And they all seem to be on track for the most part to release. Like, I know, especially the ones at the beginning of the year are definitely going to release when they're said. But yeah, I guess we'll just wrap up the episode going through a few of our, or just one each, I guess, or a couple each of what are most anticipated for 2024. So maybe I'll start it off with mine is I have one game that stands out above the rest, to the point of, like, if this was the only game that came out this year, like, this is all I need. This is looks like an incredible experience, and it's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. It's blown away my, like, I can't, every time I see a new video, I'm like, what is going on? Like, how can they have all this stuff in? And then the joke was, the two discs was like such a big joke. But now, to me, I'm looking at, I'm like you have to have to two discs. There's too much. Like, I've seen too much, let alone like what they haven't even shown us yet. It's just,
it's unreal. Maybe the first game that requires an external hard drive to even play it.
Yeah,
I don't know how many gigs it's gonna be, but man, like, the
systems, yeah,
it's worth clearing your entire like PlayStation 5 hard drive just to make sure you've got this ready to play on day one.
Well, I just remember conversations where we're like, oh, I wonder if Sid will be in it, or I wonder if Vincent Valentine will be in it, you know, and then thinking like we might get one, you know, oh, I wonder if like
Gold Saucer will be in it, and there'll be mini games and stuff like that. They basically said everything you will expect is going to be here pretty much.
I had like these wish lists of like, you know, 20, 30, 40 things, and I'm like, oh, I hope I get a couple of these in the next game. And it's like, no, you're getting them all.
It's like Oprah.
Yeah.
I will say, right. Great minds think alike, David, because yeah, this is bar none my most excited game release coming up. And it's darn soon too, right? February 29th, the old leap day.
It's really soon. Yeah.
It's really early.
It's, oh, baby. I don't think I'll probably end up replaying the first one before then, just because way things are going, I imagine there could be other games, but it would be nice to sort of rally that. But if not, this game's going to be so amazing. They've proven that they know what they're doing with the first installment. So I'm definitely very, very excited. And yeah, like you said, I don't even think there's, you know, maybe if Dragon Quest III Remake comes out, like I'm excited for that, but like it pales in comparison to the greatness that this game's going to be. Already going to be game of the year. I feel bad for everything coming out next year, because they might as well have announced it this year at the Game Awards.
Yeah.
And the 2024 is going to Final Fantasy VII.
I hope mean, the it did, bias doesn't
it
work
did
again.
Win the most anticipated game, I believe, at the Game Awards, too. So we're not alone in being really hyped up for this.
Well, that was in one of their like splash screens, right, where they gave out 30 awards in 25 seconds.
No one actually got to celebrate that. Like, it was just an announcement.
But this game is going to be amazing. I can't wait. And the fact that Jordan has something else down is that might actually be
I've tried to add some variety to the episode, I suppose, but obviously I'm super excited about it. Yeah. So speaking of other games that it's going to be another good year for RPG fans. We're going to be eating well, it looks like, in 2024. And what's going to tide me over, and maybe one of you fellows as well, until Rebirth is. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, which comes out at the end of January. So we've got a good solid month between Infinite Wealth and Rebirth, where I hope people will get into that game, because I think I already pre-ordered it. Me too. The first Like a Dragon was where they turned the Yakuza series into a turn-based RPG. It just worked out super well. I couldn't believe how engaging, how fun that system was. And I love those worlds, and I love the characters. And so to just add my favorite type of RPG system into that as well, just a recipe for success in my mind. So I'm really excited about that. It looks like there's a little bit of a fish out of water story kind of happening there with this kind of tropical setting. So I'm really excited about getting into that, too. I know there is a demo of the game that you can play if you pick up the spinoff. Yakuza game, The Man Who Erased His Name. If you finish that game, you can get a demo for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, but I feel like I don't even need the demo. Like, I'm already really excited about it. I've already pre-ordered it. So it's only a little over a month before that release. So I'll be getting into that for sure. And after the Game Awards, I had to give a shout out to Metaphor. Like, we saw another trailer for that game. And I got super excited about the game after seeing that trailer. Like, I was already like, oh, see, it's Persona creators working on this game. So, it's got that pedigree.
That'll catch your eye, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And it's got that same kind of visual style, like a Shin Megami Tensei 5 or a Persona 5. But yeah, the fact that there's like action combat to it as well, in addition to turn-based, and it's kind of this crazy anime, almost like Ghibli style world, it looks like. It doesn't look like very grounded in reality necessarily. Like, it does with all these different races and stuff like that. So them taking a more kind of anime fantasy approach, Re Fantasio built into the name, to the Persona Shin Megami Tensei kind of world. Like, I'm very excited about that. So
the few enemy designs we've seen too. Looks really
cool. Yeah, it's definitely like a stretch. And obviously we've seen like the same kind of demon style like across the SMT games and the Persona games, but they seem to be doing something different here. Maybe borrowing on a different mythos, or maybe just getting more creative about, instead of riffing on the same kind of demons we've seen before, but just going in a different direction. So that's the fall game. So we've got two bangers to start the year, and at least one game that looks like another winner for the fall season. So
and if you the fall season.
I just say fall 2024. So
I'm just cautious about these Atlas games. They just fall 2024, and then it's like, oh, actually it's gonna be like summer 2025.
Wasn't there the 2014 for Persona 5, right, or something? Like, I remember.
Yeah, it got delayed like one or two years.
I remember that. Like, twice. Oh, cool. Yeah, for the PS3.
That was rough. Yeah,
SMT5, like.
First game ever shown off on the Switch and didn't come out forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like hoping that they learn their lesson and they're like, no, the game is ready. Like, we'll get it on time. Like,
to be fair, we've also seen a fair bit of it. Like, we've seen kind of two big trailers for this game. I don't think we really ever had that for those other games, right? Like, it was more just announcements and like title screens and stuff. But
those games you don't need to sell, though. Like, in this, you don't need to sell them to the fan base. Like, that's true. Are hook, line, and sinker,
Yeah. I mean, yes, to an extent, like, this is a new franchise, right? Because it doesn't share any of the titles, but they've been really playing up the, all your favorite developers and creators have worked on the games you love. They're all here. They're all back for this one, right? Like, it does seem like this is an A team, right? So,
yeah, no, it should be good. I'm excited, but still pales in comparison.
Yeah, well, it's going to be funny, right? Like, it's going to be like a, hey, we played Rebirth at the beginning of the year, and we're playing Metaphor near the end of the year, hopefully. Like, is that going to be another kind of thing where, like, oh, wow, we just come off of playing this great game, and we're talking game of the year. We're not going to forget Rebirth, but that a larger gap between what could be two of the better games of the year, like, that'll be interesting to think about, too.
Well, they already handed out the award. I told you that.
You're right. Just pencil it in. Consider this episode also our game of the year, baby. 2024 episode. Like,
well, Jordan, it's the final outro of 2023.
Gotta make it a good one, of course. Yeah. Obviously, it's been really fun recording with you guys and with Paige this year. We have such a good time recording the podcast, and really appreciate all the support, all the listeners out there. You know, we do this because we love it, but we also do it because there's people out there that want to hear us ramble on about RPGs and other games. So, you know, appreciate you. Thank you for sticking with us. More good content to come in 2024. We'll get more good games to come in 2024 as well. You can, you know, leave comments and reviews on your podcast apps for the episodes. So, you know, we'd appreciate that. Obviously, we're on Spotify. You can reach out to David@thirstymage.com. Let him know, you know, what did you think about 2023, the episodes? You know, is there stuff you still want us to cover that we haven't yet? I know we haven't done a ton of, like, classic episodes recently because we've just been kind of facing this tidal wave of new, really good games. But we do want to get back to, you know, covering some older games and classic titles and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll have an opportunity for that in 2024, or more opportunities for that, I should say. Obviously, you know, we have other things going on that we're working on. You know, Casey's on Talk Nintendo podcast. It's busy for those guys because they're all dads now. I was saying to Perry, like, I'd love to join you guys sometime soon. So hopefully we'll do some other more crossovers next year. Would be fun as well. Obviously, you know, I've still got my reviews at Nintendo World Report. It slows down a little bit in December. That's, you know, that's just kind of the way things go, but it'll be back kind of full steam ahead next year. The book David mentioned, you know, appreciate all the plugs able to do on the Thirsty Mage. But if you haven't checked out A Game in the Life, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts. It's available in many, many places. But yeah, no, it's just been a fun year of, you know, kind of podcasting with you guys and making this show. It's always fun to get together, you know, once a week and just kind of ramble on about what we love about these games and what we're looking forward to. So I'm excited about more of that, and hope people will join us in that adventure. You know, if you're new to the Thirsty Mage, you know, there's 200 plus episodes of content to catch up on there. So please do that. Or, you know, over the holidays, if you're seeing family and friends, you know, tell them about the show, you know, let them know, hey, you know, I listen to this RPG podcast, you know, it's pretty light and chill. I talk about other stuff too. And sometimes they, you know, spend 10 minutes talking about Oreo cookies, and we like to get into different stuff here. But yeah, I guess I'll just end. You know, thanks everybody again for listening and for sticking with us. And I hope you look forward to more fun episodes next year. Hope everyone has a great holiday season. That Santa's good to you, and you know, get to see all your loved ones and everything like that. And wherever you are, doesn't snow, you don't get snowed in or something like that. I know my kids are really looking forward to snow, so they can get out there and play in it. But yeah, thanks everybody. Have a great rest of December, and we'll be back with more episodes in the coming weeks. Bye for now.
Happy New Year.